The following program is brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, and the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station.
Providing guidance as you plan and transition into retirement for over two decades, here's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
Glad you are with us on this weekend day. Or actually, it could be any day if you're listening on your podcast that you got from Money Matters. .com. Shameless plug in the first 30 seconds. Anyway, both myself and my co-host, we're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant, been doing this radio program out of Northern California for two decades, been financial advisors for 25 plus years, helping people make wise choices with their money, help them save for retirement.
Given and, our opinions.
And just helping people. It's an interesting... The world of finance is interesting. Most people want a shortcut, savings hard. There's always material.
There's a lot of competing needs.
Interests.
Yes. Children's sports, tennis shoes.
Yeah, that's why it's...
Makes it hard.
It's a challenge for a lot of people to have any sort of financial independence with those things. So our goal is to help people... make wise choices with their money, not necessarily to accumulate as many dollars by the time they die, because that's not everyone's goal. Most people's goal is to be able to have some sort of financial peace in their life in the midst of their process, to not have financial stresses, to have enough money to take care of their kids' education, have some vacations, have a house, have some sort of retirement, and perhaps do some charitable things as well. And that's the kind of thing.
Don't you find it a paradox, which is the clients that have these big, big accounts of the... There's more of a challenge having them spend the money than anything with many large accounts.
You know, it's interesting. Some people are just, their natural bent is to save. And a part of it is out of an insecurity. So they keep saving that as an insecurity, hoping that a larger bank account is going to make them feel secure.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't really enjoy it. And suddenly they're retirement, they have several million dollars, and they live like they have... several dollars.
and you have to work with those clients to try to get them to spend the money, to send it to them.
I have had this conversation many times. Now, this is in the minority, mind you, but it is there. So
that is the minority. And most people are thinking, I would like that problem.
Yeah.
I would like it if my financial advisor said, can you quit saving? Can you go spend some money? Most people, it's not.
And if you don't have a financial advisor, you can call us at 888- to Hanson, and we'll be your financial advisor on the radio.
That's right.
888-2 Hanson.
Anything financial related, love to take
Or you go to moneymatters.com and you can type in a question there.
Or you can drive by the studio and throw a brick through the window with a note on it, and we'll read the note.
We will do our best to answer that question.
Yeah, we are on the fifth floor in a descriptive, unmarked building.
Would be quite impressive if you could throw a brick that far.
And figure out which window's the studio, too. And that soundproof glass is a little thick. But it would be impressive.
It would be quite impressive. Quite impressive.
Anyway, we've got a great program lined up today talking about financial matters. And if you want to be part of the program, again, 1-888-2-HANSON. And let's start right off with Aaron, talking with Aaron. Aaron, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, how's it going?
Excellent. How you doing, Aaron?
I'm great.
Thanks for being part of the program.
Yeah, I like listening to you guys.
Thanks.
And I value your opinion, which is I'm trying to get second and even third opinions on what the wisest thing to do with a 401k that I inherited.
Okay.
I'm 37, so I've started my own kind of retirement in an IRA. But I just learned that I didn't even realize that this inherited 401k I would have to take the minimum distributions when my father would have turned 70. He passed away last year. And he was 64, so I'm thinking in 5 years I got to start taking money out of
that. No.
How large is this?
It sits at $116,000 right now.
And that's are you the sole beneficiary on this?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's how the rules work. If spouses can have an unlimited transfer, but non-spouses, like children or anybody else, you can establish what's called an inherited IRA. A beneficiary IRA. Okay?
Right.
So you could establish this through a brokerage firm, a mutual fund company, most firms will establish a beneficiary IRA. Now, with this beneficiary IRA, there are rules regarding minimum distributions. And the rules are, it's really not have to do with when he turns 70 and a half. The rule is you must either take a distribution by December 31st of the year following which he died, following the year in which he passed away, which would be distribution by the end of this year, a distribution based upon your life expectancy
and the account balance.
If you fail to do that, the account must be completely distributed within 5 years.
So that's the rules. Okay. It has nothing to do with his age.
Okay, so I had some bad information there then.
That goes without saying. Now, the question we have otherwise is, do you have a 401k now?
I have what I talked to you guys before. I have what I'm doing is putting fringe benefits. That's my wages, but it's not company match wages, but I am putting away anywhere from 10 to 15,000 roughly a year.
Okay.
In an IRA. It's not a 401k because of the terms of how I work.
Yeah, okay. So you have some sort of prevailing wage.
Right.
Work.
Right.
All right. What you can do is you can make a non-deductible IRA contribution with this money. Or deductible, depending upon how that other benefit is being treated. But you can put a non-deductible IRA contribution in every year. So you need to start this distribution, and I would actually make a non-deductible IRA contribution with this money. So you can't move it directly across, but you can take the income and then make the non-deductible IRA contribution. Once you make the non-deductible IRA contribution, assuming you have no other IRAs, you can convert it to a Roth IRA the next day. And that way it will grow tax-deferred and come out tax-free.
So the other thing I'm considering is, and I'm just waiting to have enough people tell me it's a really bad idea to not do it, but I do provide a home for my mom.
Okay.
Still alive, but not able to work for herself.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a townhome and a second townhome, so I'm kind of invested in real estate.
Okay.
If I cash this IRA out and avoid the 10% early withdrawal fee, which was info I was also told, I could pay off one of those loans.
Yeah, so...
And just have her sitting there in a home that's paid for.
So the problem with that is that if you cash this out all this year, you would actually take it all as income.
This year
is 100. Like so it would drive you into a
high tax bracket.
Right.
So I'm not necessarily opposed to that idea, but I would probably stage it over 5 or 7 years.
Which is an option I can declare. I could take it all and then they could spread it out, right? Isn't that still
Here's whenever you withdraw money from this account balance, and I was trying to look up an IRS table while we're talking about it. Anyway, if you look up an IRS life expectancy table, single life expectancy for a 37-year-old, it'll give your life expectancy. Let's call it 45 years. Let's call 50 years to make it simple. This year, you must take out 1/50th, roughly 2% of the account balance. Next year, 1/49th. The following year, 1/48th. You got to subtract by one. It's different than...
So this year, you would have taken out... You need to take out $2,500 to $3,000.
That's your minimum. And when you take out that's roughly $2,000, that will be taxable to you. Now,
right.
I like the concept. What one way to think about this is, why not just take out a monthly amount from this to pay the loan
mortgage
on the house?
Yeah.
Well, that would be one idea, but since I'm investing in real estate heavily and trying to get investment properties, I can only hold so many mortgages. So I was hoping
I could do birds with one stone
by paying one off and not having it on.
You could also use these dollars to buy a piece of property, 116. I wouldn't recommend
that. Yeah, I wouldn't do that because then your required minimum distributions become very complicated.
Right.
So I'm not opposed to the idea of using these dollars to pay down the mortgage. I would just do it over a series of years, not all in 1 year. You might do it over 3 years, 5 years, 7 years.
If you can swing it and leave the money in this IRA growing tax deferred, you only have to take out about 2% a year. You're going to find this thing is going to continue to grow. I've witnessed it personally when my wife's mother passed away. She had an inherited IRA of a smaller amount. And obviously dealt with a lot of clients, but I've also had personal experience with it. And it's just it's going to be growing faster than the distributions are. And it's tax deferred. And it's good to be diversified. You're with real estate. But ideally, you look at most people with substantial assets, it's highly diversified because things go through different cycles. So our advice is to maintain that that beneficiary IRA as long as possible. But if you don't take a distribution, at least the minimum by the end of this year, Aaron, you got to distribute the whole thing within 5 years. That's the thing you need to watch out for.
And then if I have enough time, what's your feeling on self-directed IRAs for real estate type things?
Oh, I wouldn't use they're fine, but you have a required minimum distribution coming out of this.
And
the self-directed
is you got to get an appraisal every year. And
yeah,
all that?
It's a nightmare. It's a nightmare.
But the requirement, I wouldn't use this IRA for it. A different IRA maybe, but not this one. So.
Okay, thank you guys.
Yeah, thank you. Have a great weekend.
And actually, Scott, you wouldn't. We don't recommend owning real estate in an IRA.
How about being diversified? Own some real estate outside in an IRA.
You lose a lot of the tax benefits of real estate in an IRA.
We're taking a quick break. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Got a question? Visit moneymatters.com or call 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Are you as confident as you should be when it comes to your finances? Do you feel that you're on track to accomplish your goals? If not, you owe it to yourself to take a look at Hanson McLean Advisors. Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, hosts of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, founded Hanson McLean Advisors over 20 years ago to help people make wise choices with their money. The approach taken by Hanson McLean Advisors is one of financial planning, meaning the advisors take the time with each client to help map out a strategy before they offer any solutions. Their fee-based investment accounts are designed to be transparent and liquid, so you never have to guess what's going on under the hood. And there are no commissions when products are changed or when rebalances take place. Plus, unlike many investment firms, there is a high level of communication keeping you informed and up to date. With offices in Northern California, come and see how Hanson McLean Advisors can be of benefit to you. Contact them at 1-888-2-HANSON or moneymatters.com. That's moneymatters.com.
To join the show, call us at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-242-6766.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Glad you are with us. Hey, to join the program, you'd like to be part of this show, question for us, 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-2-HANSON.
You know, so I was at a wedding a couple weeks ago. I come from a family of five kids, and my wife comes from a family of six kids. And
you have a separate account just to budget for wedding gifts and wedding travel.
Lots and lots of weddings, gracious. Right? Lots and lots of weddings. So, but my nephew asked me, he said, why is the name of your firm Hanson McLean and not McLean Hanson? And I explained to him that when we started the firm, we flipped a coin.
Is that how it is?
Do you remember?
I thought it was based upon, I couldn't remember if it was an IQ test.
Or looks.
Or beauty test.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Would you find that funny? 888-2-HANSON.
888-2-HANSON.
But it was nice. The wedding was nice and visiting with my nieces and nephews.
Was she nice, the girl?
Very nice. I had not met her, but very nice.
Of course, what are you going to say? It's the bride and all that. Even if she wasn't nice, you is on the air. It was an unfair question.
Actually, I got it.
Yes. Pat's winking at me. Really
no,
nice.
No,
and actually, a beautiful bride. And that
so,
facial expression.
Anyway, so at the rehearsal dinner, I was invited.
We'll get back to the call.
The rehearsal dinner, my brother asked me to stand up and say a few words and then say the prayer. So I stood up and said a few words and then the prayer. And then I said, and if you've liked what you've heard so far, you can listen to me every Saturday.
Thank you, Pat. I like it.
On KFPK.
And my business card here becomes a sponge.
Or KGO. And her family did not find it humorous at all.
Oh, they didn't?
No. My family found it humorous.
Well, your family knew that you were just kidding. You don't troll for business like
correct,
that.
Correct, right? Correct.
First of all, you don't really need the business.
Well, I like the business. But,
I know.
But yes, it was so inappropriate. It was funny.
That's why.
Her family did not think it was funny.
If you need auto insurance. All right. Let's go back to the call sheet. Let's talk to Arsenia. Arsenia, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yes. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I had a quick question with regard to self-directed 401ks. And we currently, my husband and I currently have two of them, and they're invested in precious metals. So one of them has gold and one has silver.
Ouch.
There's a conflict in our house. Because
really?
I would like to sell them, and I would like to take that money and put them into mutual funds. And his approach is that with the United States having all this $1 trillion in debt, stuff going on in Greece, he's more reluctant to get rid of that because he says he wants to diversify.
When did he buy the precious metals? How long ago did you put them in the portfolio?
I had a self-directed 401k for my old job, and that we put gold in that, and we did it at the same time. It was, I think I want to say around 2010, 2011. And when we bought it, gold was at a $1,500 high, wow. I think. And right now it's really low.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at it from an investment standpoint, and it's gone down drastically. So I just kind of want to take our loss and say, you know what, forget it. We did what we did. Let's just move on and put it in mutual funds. But I don't, he's reluctant, so I don't know how to.
But he's not on the call, right?
He's not on the call, but we are recording it so he can listen.
Oh, got it. So here's the argument I will make against holding the gold and silver like that. If it's a calamity play, right, which is what it sounds like, is that if he's worried and if the markets fall to pieces and everything goes terrible, the gold and silver will be more valuable.
I believe that's what he believes, yes.
Well, then don't own them in the IRA. Own them yourself and hide them, bury them under your house. Because if the markets go...
And have some guns, too.
Yes, and some stored food and water. But the reality is...
Shelter.
Is that he owns a certificate that says that there's gold or silver or some precious metal someplace else.
Right.
It's a certificate. He doesn't own that gold or metal. He has not. He doesn't
not direct
have the
ownership.
He doesn't have the ability to get to it. So it's not a calamity play the way he's doing it. It's a financial play.
Yeah.
Right. So
good. Yep.
So if he feels that way, God bless him. But he's doing it wrong. He's not even doing that right. And I can say that because I'm not married to him.
But here's the challenge that we have with precious metals. They don't produce anything, right? So if you think about your capital, your money, you can put it on deposit at a bank, earn a meager amount of interest, store it in your mattress, I suppose. You can loan it by loaning it, say, to the federal government by buying bonds.
Or putting it in the bank.
You can loan, so you can loan it or to a company and buy their bonds. Or you can go own a factor of production. You could own real property that has maybe a rental on it where you can collect some rental income. Or you can own a company and participate in the earnings. With metals, they don't produce anything. They just sit there. And the value of those metals is going to be predicated upon what someone in the future is going to be willing to pay for them.
And over the long term, the value of a metal will come back to the cost of actually getting it out of the ground and making it. Because what you have seen, what happens, it's basic supply and demand. When the price goes up, more people enter the field.
More miners.
They pull that out. They glut the market. It's no different than any other commodity. None. Mm-hmm. So I like your idea. Go and buy an investment, and if he wants the calamity play, tell him get some gold, some silver, bury it under the house.
Or get a safe, hide the safe or something.
Do something like that.
Okay.
All right.
That'll work for us. Thank you.
Okay, appreciate the call.
Good luck. And it's, I think part of the problem was, Pat, if you think back, every talk show host was getting paid to hawk someone's gold, right?
Yeah. Oh.
They all were.
Everyone.
And you still hear some ads sometime.
Yeah,
and gold went from whatever the low price was. I mean, it
did well.
It had a big run. The problem is you got to be right both when you buy and right when you sell.
Well, this one hurt. They most certainly took a big loss. And if you compare that to what the portfolio would have done invested in the S&P 500.
Oh, then it's really hurt.
Then it really hurts.
5 years, or whatever that was, Let's continue on.
Yeah, it was 5 years. She bought it in 2010.
Let's continue on along this vein.
Okay.
And talk with Harvey. Harvey, you're with Hanson McLean.
I got about the same question.
Yep, that's why we took you right next year.
Okay.
Yours a little different, though.
I think you answered most of it. What I bought was Tocqueville Gold Fund for about $5,000, and it's lost literally 50% of its value, and a silver iShares, silver trust and ETF.
Yes.
Neither one. And my question basically is, I could sell it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to lose 50% of what I put into it, but where do I go?
So what you own here, you own two different things. So you own a gold mutual fund that doesn't invest in gold itself, but invests in mining companies. And it's almost like a leveraged way to play gold, because as gold prices go up in value, if you're a miner, it's a good thing, right? Gold prices are up, you're a miner, you're getting gold out of the ground, it's a good thing. The higher the price goes, you can think, heck, we could afford to have some more mines, and it's a very profitable thing for the company as the gold price goes up. The inverse is true as well. So when gold prices go down, suddenly you're like, oh, no, not only is the gold falling, but our profits are falling as well. Now I can't even afford to keep all my mines open, et cetera. So it's a double-edged sword. That's why you saw about a 50% decline in a gold mutual fund, although gold hasn't declined that rapidly.
Because of the leverage.
The silver, on the other hand, you own an ETF, exchange-traded fund, on silver, which gives you an indirect ownership to silver, and that will track with the price of silver. You could have owned gold the same way through an iShares GLD portfolio, gold, but you didn't. So the one thing we like to ask people is, would you buy this investment today? And if
no, I wouldn't.
Okay, then you shouldn't own it.
Well, I shouldn't say that, because I don't know. The last time I had silver, I lost big time. It went from $30 down to about $5 or $4 or something like that.
Okay.
And I sold it at the wrong time.
Okay.
But if you hold this long enough, I, as a betting man, would believe it's going to go up in value.
But it's always opportunity cost, right? So the problem is that you look at this and emotionally say, well, I have to if I sell this, I have to admit, one, I was wrong. And
which is hard as an investor.
And the last time I did this, I shouldn't have sold it. But what you didn't ask yourself was, well, what did I do with that money? Right? What?
Yes.
So clients always say to me, they'll say, oh, this stock did really well. And if you look at it and you say, well, it didn't do as well as the market, but it did well. So it's always an opportunity cost. If you wouldn't buy it, if it was me, I wouldn't have bought it in the first place. But if I owned
it's not to say that we're perfect, never make mistakes.
I just don't like the asset class. I don't like what drives the asset class, because what drives this asset class a lot is emotion and people hawking.
There's no real fundamental there.
But behind
the problem. You don't know how to value it.
So I would sell it. I'd take the loss on the taxes, and I'd reinvest the proceeds, and I wouldn't buy it again.
I went out and bought Biotech Technology Fund,
mm-hmm.
and Fidelity's biotech. I think
I
can't remember exactly what it is.
Okay,
and those I did those earlier this year, and those did well. I wish I would have sold all this stuff.
Well,
and done that.
Is
it too late now to get into that?
I'm not even.
Well, here's the thing. What you're doing is trying to pick little sectors. We don't know how to pick sectors. We don't believe that that's a long-term profitable way to make money, by picking sectors like that. And the reason we say that, most professional money managers can't outperform the broad markets by trying to pick sectors. So if the team at Goldman Sachs, I'm picking on them for a minute, has trouble outperforming the market with their team of the brightest analysts that are out there. If they have a hard time doing it, how can the average person pick the individual sectors?
So I would sell those and
you're better off with just like an index fund of some sort.
By the total market. So appreciate the call.
All right.
Yeah. And sorry. I mean, you should be grateful you had some wins along the way in addition to the losses you took on the other one. We're just not the precious metal thing. They go through these cycles.
Yeah.
You can't predict them.
No, no. There's. It's hard to measure the fundamentals. It's emotion. Although most of the market, a lot of the market is emotion. But at least you like fundamentals.
If there's a company that has earnings and the company's growing their earnings, you can feel good. You, at least that's something to
measure
against.
And relative to different companies, you can measure.
It's very. It's a great challenge to do when it comes to precious metals, which is why we're not a big fan of investing in precious metals.
I think that most listeners got that by now.
Is that right?
Well, I've just listened to the last two calls.
All right.
I think we were positive on either.
Hey, we're taking a short break. When we come back, we'll continue on with calls. If you'd like to be part of Hanson McLean, join us, Hanson, 888-2-HANSON. That's 888-2-HANSON. Also, you can go to our website, moneymatters.com, submit a question through there, moneymatters.com. We'll be right back.
To be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, visit moneymatters.com or call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-242-6766.
You hear Scott Hanson and Pat McLean each weekend as they host Hanson McLean's Money Matters. And if you're not yet a client of Hanson McLean Advisors, you really ought to give them a shot. You see, the same type of straightforward financial advice that is provided during the show is what the clients of Hanson McLean Advisors receive on a regular basis. The approach of Hanson McLean Advisors is to first listen to you and then help come up with a plan to provide a greater chance of success in achieving your financial goals. Goals that range from retirement planning to debt elimination to income solutions. Hanson McLean Advisors is not simply a store that sells one type of product. No, Hanson McLean Advisors is an independent advisory firm that pick from a wide variety of financial products. They use investment tools from well-known brand names, in addition to financial products from lesser-known boutique shops, all with the objective to help you meet your financial goals. So if you have yet to see how the commission-free programs of Hanson McLean Advisors can benefit you, contact them today at 1-888-2-HANSON or visit them at moneymatters.com.
Hi everyone, this is John Coyne, producer of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Thanks for being one of our loyal podcast listeners. Did you know that you can still be on the show and have your financial questions answered? Simply go to moneymatters.com, click on the big orange button that says Ask Scott and Pat a Question. I'll personally contact you and schedule a time to have you on one of our upcoming shows. We can't wait to help you.
Helping you take the worry out of your retirement. It's back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
Hope you're having a great weekend. I am having a great weekend, and that's what's really important to me, I suppose. Yeah.
It's just good having the kids get back to school.
Back with the routine everybody likes. I know. Anyway, this financial program we're talking about... Financial Matters, and if you want to be part of the show, 888-2-HANSON.
Or you can go to our website, moneymatters.com.
And on moneymatters.com, that if you haven't been on that website lately, I'd encourage you to check it out. We've got a phenomenal library. And if you've got a question, let's say you're thinking about, how do I think about Roth or not Roth? That or retirement income or college savings or should I refinance my house? If you go into that library... or you can just type in a question, search for a question. It'll give you a variety of different things. You'll have some radio clips that we've done. We've done this radio program for 20 years. So there'll be some clips where we've answered other callers on that topic.
There'll be articles. There'll be little vignettes, little videos.
Might be a video of me talking about it or some other video. There's a variety of different things. If you've been listening to the program for a while, you kind of understand our philosophy, our way of viewing the world when it comes to financial planning. And it's got... that kind of financial planning worldview on the whole thing. So
we've been working on this for the last year, this revamp. And I say we, I mean the people at Hanson McLean in the technology department and the content development.
Yes.
They launched this a couple weeks ago. I'm proud of it, actually.
Yeah, the moneymatters.com. It's good.
Moneymatters.com.
Yeah, awesome. Really excited.
Yes. Wake the kids, call the neighbors.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's do this.
And considering we have teenagers, they probably still are asleep.
That is.
888-2-HANSEN to be part of the program. We're talking with Tony. Tony with Hanson McLean.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me on the radio.
Thanks for being part of the show, Tony.
Well, my question is, I have a rental that I bought in the year 2000. It's a 30-year fix with a 6.5 interest rate that I pretty much break even on every month.
Had you never refinanced it?
Actually, I refinanced it one time in the year 2000.
And what's the value of the property?
The property is worth $80,000.
And what do you owe on it?
Oh, I'm sorry. The property is worth $150,000.
I was going to say there. Okay.
Yeah, it's worth $150,000, and I owe $80,000 on it.
Okay.
With the 6.5 interest rate.
Okay, what's your question for us?
The question is, should I refinance the loan with a new 30-year fix and take advantage of the lower interest rates?
Halfway
into the loan.
How old are you?
46.
You said 46?
Yes.
Okay, and tell me about your primary residence. What's the value of that?
My primary residence, we bought it for $187,000, mm-hmm. and now it's worth a little over $320,000.
And what do you owe on it?
Probably, we only own it for a couple of years.
Yeah, so what do you owe on it?
Probably like $184,000.
And what's the interest rate?
The interest rate is 5.5%.
Okay, so here's what I would do. You ready for this? This is completely...
Well, this is a house that I actually bought before I met my wife, and then my wife and I bought the house that we live in now together.
Got it. So here's what I would do.
How long ago did you move out? You plan to keep the rental long term, is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
So here's what I would do. I would refinance the primary mortgage into a 15-year fixed rate. You're going to get it at sub 4%.
Uh-huh.
And I would finance it for $264,000.
Uh-huh.
And then I would take that $80,000 above and beyond what you owe on that, and I would pay off the rental property.
Okay.
Right? And so here's the thinking behind this. One is, because it's a primary residence, your interest rates are going to be lower, and you're borrowing money. And so you're pledging collateral, right? You're pledging either collateral, which would be the rental house, or your primary residence.
Uh-huh.
You want to pledge the property that actually gives you the lowest cost of money, and that's the primary mortgage, the primary resident.
Uh-huh.
I would recommend you refinancing both of these anyway, because the interest rates are substantially lower than this.
Right.
So by doing this, you're actually going to get the cost down, because no one really wants to refinance an $80,000 loan either.
Uh-huh.
So that's why you're going to do it on the primary residence, and then you're going to take the cash out and pay down the interest rate. And you're going to do it at a 15-year fixed.
Probably around 3%, a little over 3%.
Maybe. And what you'll see is that your net, your monthly, overall monthly income, overall monthly payment, even on the 15-year, will be lower than what you're paying now.
And that'll be on the...
primary residence.
On the primary residence.
Correct.
As a 15-year?
Yep.
Okay.
I totally agree with Pat. And sometimes it's hard for people to get their, wait a minute, that mortgage is on a rental, I don't want to do it on my primary. The fact is you owe the money regardless, right?
Right.
And you might be able to walk away from your primary. You can't walk away from a rental property. It's just the way the banking
And you've got enough equity in both of them that the chances of you walking away because they
you're
go upside down are close to zero. So that's why you're going to pledge the primary residence as the collateral for the 15-year fixed rate mortgage. And I wouldn't wait on financing this. I'd call Monday.
And you're saying pay down the rental.
100%. Just pay the thing off.
Uh-huh.
And you can still get the tax deduction because you're allowed to take a deduction on your original mortgage balance plus up to $100,000 in home equity. So that's what you'll be doing.
And not to take up too much of your time.
We got an hour to kill.
To kill every week. I'm crying out loud.
My wife and I already had kids from previous marriages.
Okay.
And I kind of like pledged the rental house to my son, you know, later on down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So I was kind of like trying to keep she had her own house and I had my own house. I was like, well, okay, well, this house is going to be left to my son.
I understand how you're thinking. What you need to do is go to an estate planning attorney and don't think so much as the assets, like the house. Just think of
percentages.
Percentages.
Okay.
And the longer you're married, it's probably it starts to kind of change.
Yes. It? Yeah. And depending upon how the relationship's going week by week. Not joking.
And then the money that we take from the rental, we just continue to pay it on the mortgage loan.
You're gonna do that because it's a 15-year note. Yes.
Okay.
All righty.
The light bulb came on.
The problem people have with this is they say, well, that's a rental property. I don't want to. But the reality is all you're doing is pledging collateral to get a loan. Uh-huh. And you want to pledge the collateral that gives you the lowest cost of money. Yes. And that's your primary residence.
Yep. Right.
All righty.
Okay. Well,
estate planning attorney about how your children and her children are going to be treated in the case of whoever dies first. Which is important. I mean, especially here, because you both brought assets into the marriage,
right?
And so what happens is that if you die first, you may want her to hold on to the assets until she dies and then pass to the children,
right?
Or vice versa, and that's what an estate planning attorney will do for you.
Good protections in there too.
Yeah, because normally we always just kept it separated, and then you know this is actually joining it, you know, by doing this.
Yep.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
Right. Okay. You too. Bye.
Thanks, Tony. I mean, there's other ways to structure that too, to still have, if you truly want to do the house. I wanted to mention, because this might affect some of our listeners here, the tax deductibility of interest on a home. You are only allowed to take, first of all, the limit is it's $1 million on all residences. So if you've got more than one house, it's $1 million on all your residences. That's the maximum.
The loan.
Plus, the tax deductibility of the mortgage interest of a loan, $1 million, and $100,000 of home equity, regardless of how the home equity is spent. But if you, let's say you bought a house for $600,000 and you had a $500,000 mortgage on it, and the $600,000 house became worth $1 million, and you refinance the $500,000 mortgage to a $750,000 mortgage, you cannot deduct all that interest.
You're not supposed to.
The IRS has been auditing people on this. So you cannot, you're not legally allowed to take that deduction on that. Furthermore, it wasn't even the original loan balance. It also declines with whatever your original mortgage scale is. So if you had in that situation, you had a $500,000 mortgage that had, let's say it had been paid down to $400,000, you go and refinance it for $600,000, you're not entitled to take the full deduction on that interest. And the IRS has been auditing on that.
Yes.
It's one of those things that people played fast and loose by the rules in the 2000s, the real estate craze. But it's one of those things that you need to be careful of.
And this rule's been around for years. People just didn't follow it. Now the IRS is coming down on
it. That's right. And so that's one of the things you need to be careful of when you got a rental property. You'd want to talk to your CPA to make sure that.
But in his particular case.
I'm just talking. But it's only him. I'm trying to talk to the thousands of other listeners.
I thought you were questioning my advice.
No, I said it. I said it worked perfect for him. For the thousands of other listeners out there that might be impacted by this, that's what I was doing.
Good advice, Scott.
Well, thank you. I was just waiting for that. A little attaboy there.
Do you feel better now?
No, but I'm getting it. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters, 1-888-2-Hanson. We'll be right back.
To have your questions answered by Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, visit their website at moneymatters.com. Or call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Are you as confident as you should be when it comes to your finances? Do you feel that you're on track to accomplish your goals? If not, you owe it to yourself to take a look at Hanson McLean Advisors. Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, hosts of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, founded Hanson McLean Advisors over 20 years ago to help people make wise choices with their money. The approach taken by Hanson McLean Advisors is one of financial planning, meaning the advisors take the time with each client to help map out a strategy before they offer any solutions. Their fee-based investment accounts are designed to be transparent and liquid, so you never have to guess what's going on under the hood. And there are no commissions when products are changed or when rebalances take place. Plus, unlike many investment firms, there is a high level of communication keeping you informed and up to date. With offices in Northern California, come and see how Hanson McLean Advisors can be of benefit to you. Contact them at 1-888-2-HANSON or moneymatters.com. That's moneymatters.com.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McClain's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
Pat McClain.
Glad you're with us as we talk about money.
If you'd like to join the show, 888-2-HANSON, 888-2-HANSON, or you could go to our website, moneymatters.com, and you can type in a question there.
We briefly addressed on Tony, the last caller, on second marriage, both bringing assets into a marriage, both have grown children. That is when it's really important to have proper state documents in place.
Yes.
Trust, wills, to have things spelled out clearly. We've seen so many instances of people being disinherited.
Intentionally and unintentionally.
Intentionally. I can think of somebody right now, pictures in my mind, an intentional disinherit, an intentional draining down one account over years so that the children of that from the previous spouse didn't get the... I've seen
and
it.
Remember, if the assets are inherited by the kids, you didn't grow up with these people. You don't. You might not even know your... You know, I guess they would be your stepbrother or stepsister. You might not know them. You might not have ever even... Maybe you met them a couple times. It's hard enough to inherit money with kids that grew up together. Believe me, there's enough infighting. And these are people that love each other.
That's right. So
that's why you want to go see a qualified estate planning attorney.
Oftentimes on second marriage, and sometimes I'll talk to people getting married, maybe they're divorced or widowed, whatever the case, it's a second marriage. They don't want to talk about prenup. Going through the estate planning process, you go to a good estate planning attorney, it oftentimes can accomplish the same objectives, what you're looking for, without having to call that.
Without calling it a prenuptial.
Telling your fiancé you want to go get a prenuptial agreement.
Or a postnuptial.
Or try that one on.
I know someone that did.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
A client?
No.
No? Yeah, postnuptial. Yeah, good luck on that one. I'm sure that was they had a great weekend after that.
Hey, honey, I know we've been married all this time, but...
Not that I don't trust you, but... All right, let's talk to Arnold. Arnold, you're with Hanson McClain.
Yeah, this is Artie Hanson. How are you doing?
Excellent, sir.
Hey, I have a couple of questions about the required minimum distribution from tax-deferred accounts.
Okay.
I hate to admit it, but I'm going to be 70 and a half in August of next year. My wife is 67. We're both retired. And I have a 457, a regular IRA, a Roth, and my wife has a regular IRA. And my questions are, can I total all of the accounts except for the Roth, calculate the required minimum distribution, and take the distribution from just one account? And when and how does my wife's account fit into the required distribution? And lastly, when does the first distribution have to be completed?
Great questions. Common questions, great questions.
Yes.
I'm going to answer your last question first. Okay. You must start taking distributions no later than the April 1st following the year in which you turn age 70 and a half.
So for you, that would be April of 2017.
Okay, that's when I have to start.
Yes.
No, yeah, must have a distribution no later than that April 1st. The challenge, if you wait until 2017, you'll be required to take a distribution that first quarter prior to April 1st. Then you'll be required to take a distribution by December 31st of that year.
For that year.
Okay.
So you may want to take your required minimum distribution this year so that you don't move yourself up into a higher marginal tax rate.
Okay. So when I do my taxes this year, I take the required minimum distribution and then I'm set to go.
Yes. Now, the second question you had, which is, hey, if I total these all together and take the required minimum distribution out of just one of the accounts, is that allowable?
No. It is. If you had three IRAs... You can do that with the IRAs. But when you have other previous employer-qualified plans, you've got to take it from that plan.
So you said you have a 457 and one IRA or two IRAs?
One IRA, one Roth.
I have a 457 and a regular IRA.
Okay.
And I think the Roth doesn't count.
That is correct. That is right. Yeah. So you need to do one from the 457 and the regular IRA. I do have a question for you.
Okay.
Why do you own this 457 still?
The 457 is with ICMA from the city of Sacramento, and I've had that since 1970.
And what is the investment inside of it? Do you have the stable value fund, or do you have a mutual fund?
It's a stable value. Primarily, it's kind of a safe investment.
Okay.
Probably
40. I would leave it there. I would. So, and the reason is that stable value fund.
They're hard to buy that particular fund in an IRA. You're not going to get something similar. If you said, oh, I have stock mutual funds in there, I would just continue. I would move the money into an IRA. But the 457, yeah, leave it there. You're fine.
Okay.
And then your wife, when she reaches age 70 and a half, you just need to take a distribution from her IRA. There's really no commingling at all.
Okay. So I don't have to total hers into...
You can't there for sure.
Yeah, it has nothing to do with that.
Okay, because it was confusing when I read
tax
IRS
code
publication.
IRS publication being
so
confusing.
There
that's
is,
weird, aren't
there it? There is one thing I would point out. Check your beneficiary designations on your 457 plan.
Okay.
If you haven't recently. So make sure your wife is listed as a primary, and then the kids are listed as a contingent.
They are.
Okay. I would just check that. And we have on our website, moneymatters.com, there is a couple articles that speak to this.
Yep, and tables, et cetera, for the requirement of distribution.
Yeah. So if you need more information, go to moneymatters.com, or you can call our show whenever you want.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks
All right.
for being Appreciate part of Hanson McLean. Have a great rest of the weekend.
All right, you too, and take care.
Thanks. Why we're on this matter, Pat, because often you were alluding to rolling the 457 over to an IRA. And there is a strategy, a tax strategy. If you either currently work for an employer or have worked for an employer where you've had employer stock in your 401k or in your ESOP, you're going to want to listen.
Okay? Yes.
So there's a strategy, what's known as net unrealized appreciation. Here's where this comes into play. You got an employer savings plan at work, 401k, an ESOP, profit sharing plan that has employer stock in the plan. The actual, you are an owner of the shares in the company. When you retire, if you transfer that 401k or other profit sharing plan into an IRA, you can roll it to an IRA. It's a tax-free event for you, right? There's no tax consequences for doing that. And almost everything you read will talk about the benefits of a IRA rollover and why it makes sense. If you just do that, you are going to be giving up a potential of phenomenal tax savings.
Which is this net unrealized appreciation of that stock in the 401k.
So here's how this works.
I should point out, it has to be stock. It can't be units. So some 401ks, you think you own stock, because it shows, but you own units that are represented of the stock, not the stock itself.
You own some derivative. That's not the actual share. So you actually have to be an owner, a direct ownership inside the company. But here's how it
works. In your 401k.
Let's assume that you have stock valued at $100,000 in your 401k. And let's assume that what you paid for those shares over the years, maybe your contribution, including what the employer's contributions were, let's assume that it was $10,000. Okay, so let's assume you work for a company that's done phenomenally well. Stock price went up in a huge manner. So it's $100,000 worth of stock in the company retirement plan, and your cost base is what you paid for. It's $10,000. You roll those into an IRA and then pull the $100,000 out. That $100,000 will be taxed to you as ordinary income, okay? Whether it's rolled in or you just take it. Now, if instead you say, rather than rolling these into an IRA, company, please take all of my excess dollars and those funds, transfer that to my IRA, but take the shares and just send them home to me.
Send them directly. Do not roll the shares over.
And although you say you're supposed to withhold 20%, you really don't have to on the stock. So if you think you do, let me talk to a supervisor. I'm going to nail this, get this thing.
You've done this before.
Yes. Have the shares transferred directly to you. When the shares are transferred directly to you, what's taxable to you is not the $100,000 value, but the $20,000 cost basis.
What you paid for them.
And you're saying, well, why would I want to incur a tax liability? Well, when you subsequently sell those shares, you'll have favorable capital gains treatment.
Not ordinary income.
Plus, let's say it's a stock that produces a dividend. You can hold the shares. The stock will pay out a qualified dividend to you, which is favorable tax treatment, not ordinary income. So the tax ramifications regarding this they're phenomenal.
So if you're listening and you are saying, well, this kind of makes a little bit of sense. I would tell you it is filled with landmines. Don't do it alone.
Yeah, don't do it alone.
Your company is going to mess it up.
Yes. every time I've done it with help.
We've never had one go smoothly, but we do them.
Yeah, not every day because they're kind of a rare thing.
But when
the right
when the right situation. But when we do and we tell the clients, look, don't get mad at us. Your company is going to mess this up. They are so rare, no one knows how to actually handle them. But it's in the tax code, and it's got incredible tax advantages. And it's if you will, a loophole.
Net unrealized appreciation. I don't know if it's a loophole.
Well, you know what loopholes are, Scott. It's a long slit in the side of a castle that you shoot an arrow through.
We discussed this on the show.
I was in Ireland. I went to a castle and saw the loopholes.
You did?
I did. Recently.
Okay. Pat goes to Ireland. Pat finally takes a vacation and goes to Ireland for a couple of days. How long did you spend in Ireland?
3 days.
3 days. That's a kind of McLean vacation. McLean's went to a family vacation years ago. They were supposed to be gone 2 weeks to Europe, right? Just
yeah.
4 or 5 years ago. He came back early. What are you doing early? We were just done. What do you mean? Yeah, we're done.
We were done.
Weren't you on a cruise? Mm, yeah. But you left early. Yeah, we're done.
We were done. I did not. I'm not.
Anyway.
The idea of cruising is much actually. Anyway, so these loopholes.
Anyway, the concept is net unrealized appreciation. We highly recommend if you have employer shares in your retirement plan, before you retire, before you roll those dollars over into an IRA, talk with a qualified advisor, a Hanson McLean advisor, or somebody else who's qualified in this matter, to have a discussion regarding this. You're going to want to do this correctly because once it's in the IRA,
you can't do it.
This tax benefit's gone.
And it has to take place in the transfer from the 401k.
And it could mean tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, or millions of dollars in tax savings to you, depending on how much company stock you've got there. So, unfortunately, we are out of time. We are here every Saturday. Broadcast on this station at this hour. You can also get a podcast of this program delivered to your mobile device every week. Just visit moneymatters.com to sign up for our podcast. Also at moneymatters.com, there's a great library of information. We will see you next Saturday. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. This has been Hanson McLean.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.
Hi, everyone. This is John Coyne, producer of Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Thanks for being one of our loyal podcast listeners. Did you know that you can still be on the show and have your financial questions answered? Simply go to moneymatters.com, click on the big orange button that says Ask Scott and Pat a Question. I'll personally contact you and schedule a time to have you on one of our upcoming shows. We can't wait to help you.